This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome to the Mom in Mind podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On the episode today, I'm talking with Dr. Olivia Waddell. She does talk about her personal experience a little bit, and we focus on a lot of the grief that comes up for people, sometimes, oftentimes actually, unexpected grief, and grief in unexpected ways. And the grief process is a very messy one, but for people who have lost their mothers earlier on in life and are going into the motherhood experience for themselves, sometimes you just don't know what's going to come up when you have your own child, and some unexpected grief can come up. We also talk about grief that comes up in multiple ways, whether you had a good relationship with your mother or a not good relationship, and other types of grief like disenfranchised grief, which she'll talk about a little bit more. This is such an important conversation, and I know one that everybody can resonate with because we've all at least experienced disenfranchised grief. But for those of you in particular who've experienced the loss of a mother, whether it was a good relationship or not, I know that this will resonate for you as well. Dr. Olivia is a temporarily tired but permanently happy mom of a happy, creative, and wildly curious boy who is four. And professionally, she is a licensed professional counselor in Texas. In addition to postpartum and maternal mental health counseling, she offers non-clinical support services for prenatal and postpartum planning for families, psychoeducation and support for parents with children ages 1 through 3, and community and provider education on perinatal mental health. She is a trained facilitator for Circle of Security Parenting Intervention Program and is also a certified provider for mother loss grief training. So let's dive in and meet Dr. Olivia. Welcome, Olivia. Thank you for being here.
It's great to be here. I'm excited about our conversation.
Me too. And I'm really happy that you're bringing a wide perspective on grief and motherhood because, you know, people associate so closely grief with just death. Yes. But there are so many other types of grieving that people experience. That's such a needed conversation because people often don't know why they're feeling what they're feeling.
Yes.
And you are going to help them understand that.
Yes.
So yeah, please do start wherever you'd like with, you know, your entry into this work.
Yes, absolutely. I will share a little bit about my personal experience because it's due to that and what I went through that I learned that grief is multifaceted. I mean, that it doesn't present just in instances of loss. It can present in multiple ways. So I was fortunate to become a mother, what I would consider a little bit later in life. And I lost my mom in my 20s. So one of the things that just completely blindsided me, literally laying there just moments after delivering my son, was this overwhelming and I can't even think of a word to really describe the feeling. It was just really overwhelming. Like I desperately wanted my mother in that moment. And I was blindsided. I was like, I'm feeling this tremendous joy, just so much love. And my birth was one of those experiences where I did feel immediate love and bonding with my son as soon as I held him. So I was very much blindsided whenever I just felt these waves of grief come over me. And I was like, well, this was unexpected. So I honestly, and you know, when you're in the throes with a newborn, you don't really have time to think and process a lot outside of what needs to be done immediately. So it was several months in, whenever I was going to counseling myself, that I realized that actually what I was angry about and some of the things that were affecting me, it was grief. And it was really re-grieving the loss of my mother, the things that I knew would be helpful if I had her, you know, if she was here, if she was present to help out. So it was not only grieving the fact that she is not here, but grieving all of the things that I was experiencing daily that I knew she was missing out on. So that led me to fast forward another year or so, and I obtained my PMHC to specialize in perinatal mental health, just because I wanted other birth givers to not be so caught off guard by grief. Yeah. So that is how it began, with just a little part of my own story, because it was from there that I learned there are so many other things that we will grieve along the way.
For sure. Just in the transition.
Yes. Parenthood. Yes. Yes.
And so I've had a couple of, well, a handful of clients who've experienced something similar to what you're mm-hmm. describing. And just like you said, all of their experiences, like they thought they, you know, had kind of like, quote unquote, dealt with it or were at a certain yes. place with it. But this mm-hmm. is one of those things you don't necessarily anticipate being
yes.
hit with this.
Right.
And how, what's the word? Not destabilizing, but maybe even disorienting or mm-hmm. kind of put you off a bit.
Yes. Yes.
And like trying to orient yourself into your own motherhood or parenthood experience.
Yes. Yes.
Is that what you see a lot?
I do see that a lot. And I think disorientation or disoriented is a great way to describe it, because I know when I became a mom, and I see it in so many instances with clients, it's very hard to reconcile that you can love your baby and be so glad to be a parent, but also really grieve other components of the experience. And I think that's what sort of, I don't want to say tripped me up, but that's the phrase that comes to mind. It was like, how do I feel both things? Right. And the result is being very disoriented.
Yeah. They seem like they would be opposite feelings.
Yes.
In a way. And I mean, I think when you were saying that, it made me remember just how much pressure there is anyways, and how you're supposed to feel a certain way during this mm-hmm. time. And
yes.
Which totally takes out this other complexity.
Mm-hmm. It does. I just remember that. And, you know, I've had clients say the same thing, when there are constant messages that you're supposed to enjoy every moment, and there's some moments that you're simply not enjoying for various reasons, you start to, I think we can internalize that. And then we start to second guess ourselves, and it can just lead to a spiral of other difficult thoughts and feelings.
Absolutely. So yeah, I would love to talk more about this, what you see and what the grief looks like and feels like mm-hmm. for people who are starting their, well, in this case, what we're talking about, their motherhood journey without yes. their own mother. What mm-hmm. are some of the things that you see that people experience, especially things that like people wouldn't necessarily tag as, oh, this is grief?
Yes. Yes. I really believe that there are, when we see presentation of postpartum anger or postpartum rage, that if we start peeling back some of those layers, that it's almost always something related to a grief. I've had multiple situations over the last 3 years or so where we would be working with that presentation, just postpartum rage, for example, and we would start looking through like family history and meaningful relationships. I would say in more than half of the cases, there was a maternal loss when the relationship was healthy. And then there's a separate complication with that grief when there's mother loss and the relationship was not healthy, when it was toxic. Yeah. So again, multifaceted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is interesting too, from the sense of like, even for, you made me think of a couple of folks that I've been working with where their mothers are alive, but the relationship yes. is not there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The mom is not a supportive person, and how much loss that feels.
Yes. Like. Yes.
too. Mm-hmm. Right. So essentially not having your mother there or
yes,
or mother that you feel supported by mm-hmm. are both types of loss.
Yes. Yes. Both types of loss.
If you have a specific example of like, I'm really interested in the rage component that you were describing. I assume yes. that can relate to a lot of different types of loss, a lot of yes. different types of grief. But like, what have you seen for people when you've been able to help them identify that their rage is connected to a type of loss?
Yes, that's a great question. And really, I still remember the first time I was in a session and we made that connection that, yes, I'm angry, but I'm grieving. We were looking at a feelings wheel and anger was listed as one of the big emotions. And then some of the smaller emotions that were under anger, grief was one of them. And so the light bulb, it was like a light bulb came on for me because I was like, is there any chance at what you're feeling with all of this, you know, frustration and anger? There's some grief mixed in as well. And she's like, well, yeah. She said, I think so. She said, but nobody would believe me. You know, she said, I've tried to talk about it. People think I'm being silly. So again, started digging. And that's where some of the information around disenfranchised grief came up. That was an instance where it was a situation where her mother is alive, but was not a safe person, was not a supportive person. And so she was feeling like with her transition in becoming a mother, that she was dealing with everything that came back up from her childhood and her teenage years and feelings of abandonment and those worries translated into, well, what if I do this to my child? Oh my. So I still remember it was like really like a light bulb just came on when both of us realized it's like, yes, you're angry, but what's really going on here is you're grieving.
That's really mm-hmm. powerful.
Yes.
That's really powerful because that rage and anger feels horrible.
Yes, it does.
It feels horrible. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think a lot of people feel, you know, confused by it.
Yes.
By it even sometimes. Yes. Like, why mm-hmm. am I feeling this?
Yes.
So, wow. I mean, for people who are listening or, you know, maybe experiencing mm-hmm. rage themselves, this would be a great exploration point.
Yes.
To look into grief as part of that reason. And I want to highlight and have you talk a little bit more about what you said, the disenfranchised grief.
Yes.
Can you talk about what that is? And
yes. And I've seen it relate to anger and what we would classify as postpartum rage, just like mother loss, obviously different feelings associated with it, but things around like going back to work, feeling very sad, grieving about going back to work due to thoughts around this, I'm going to be missing out on time with my baby, all of the shoulds, those, you know, societal constructed messages, like I should not put my kiddo in childcare. On the flip side, I've also seen situations where moms are very excited about going back to work, and that's okay too, but then feeling guilty and feeling upset and feeling sad about, am I a bad mom because I'm excited to go back to work? So, and then just some other examples of disenfranchised grief that I've seen in my practice, things like the relationship changes. You know, if you're in a committed relationship, that can be really hard to deal with and really hard to see the changes in the relationship that happen as a result of becoming parents. And I would say also when you add kiddos to, you know, all the relationship dynamics change. So I've seen that. And then grieving the life that you had before. I see that one a lot in my practice, trying to reconcile, yes, I love being a mom. And in some cases, I love my kiddos, but I don't necessarily love being a mom. And just the sadness and the way it's described, it really is a grief experience. Like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And I'm sad about it, but I don't feel like there's a lot of space for me to say that out loud.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is another one of those areas where people's experience gets minimized. Like, oh, well, mm-hmm. you have a happy, healthy kid
yes.
or whatever
yes.
it is, you know.
Yes.
And maybe it's not the intention to minimize somebody's feelings,
yes.
but that's often the impact. Mm-hmm. Gosh, that makes it hard for people to open up.
Yes, it does. The dismissive messages I've seen are just really rampant in so many circles, yeah. in so many settings, the dismissive messages that accompany things that we grieve that maybe society doesn't recognize as grief related. It does a lot of harm. It does yeah. a lot of harm.
Absolutely.
This podcast is sponsored by Paired. One of the things I hear weekly is how clients feel distant or not as connected to their partners, and also how they'd like to feel heard and seen by their partners. So, for all you partners out there, it might be time to try Paired. It's an app
that helps couples connect in a meaningful way, especially for couples who either feel disconnected, don't have time to sit down together, or who are just wanting to keep the connection going. This app is great. My husband and I are on it, and one of the things I love are the games where I answer a set of fun or interesting questions, and then he does the same, and we see where our answers line up or are different. It's a really cool way of learning something new about him, even though we've been together over 20 years. And there are a bunch of other great questions geared towards connection and understanding and intimacy that, when you share your answers, can help you and your partner understand each other better. Share the love this Mother's Day by going to paired.com/mind to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. That's paired.com/mind to sign up today. Let's give the gift of connection this Mother's Day. A happier relationship starts here.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
And I think to that point, impacts a lot of relationships.
Yes, it does.
If you don't feel like you can talk to somebody about it, you don't feel close to the people you're trying to connect with. Tend to like pull back, not want to share anymore. And then your grief also feels very lonely.
Yes, lonely and isolating. But I think it's really important with conversations around grief, whether disenfranchised or related to the loss, there has to be a context of emotional safety to be able to process and share those thoughts and feelings. And when it changes the nature of the relationship, then emotional safety goes out the window.
Oh, right. Oh, for sure. I don't think that's necessarily the intent always.
Right.
Of the person,
right.
Who's, you know, being dismissing your feelings.
Yes.
Sometimes they themselves can't tolerate
exactly
the feelings that you're having.
Oh, yes.
You know, like if I go to somebody and I'm sort of feel like I'm pouring over with this grief feeling, and they don't know what to do with it, they might just trying to put band-aids on it, like, oh, but you're fine, blah blah blah. Because we don't, I think as a society, at least in Western culture, don't have really good ways to deal with grief.
Yes.
In a community sort of way.
Yes.
Or individually, now that I think about it.
Right. Really, in any way in Western society. I mean, I think some of the healthier organizations that I've seen will give, you know, a week of bereavement. And that's when it's related to an actual loss, to death. But when you're in the position of grieving a loss that maybe happened several years ago and, you know, trying to figure out parenting and all of the things, it's almost like there is no acceptable standard for time. So,
right.
So hard.
It is so hard. And yeah, you do bring up a really great point. Just about, you know, the systems that are set up.
Oh, yes.
The week is generous in terms
of... It is generous.
In kind of, you know, corporate systems or whatnot. It's often 3 days. But you know,
3 days.
There's been an actual, you know, loss or death. I think some states are trying to change as it relates to perinatal loss.
I think so. Yes.
Which is great. But still, I mean, if you look in the DSM for like how long the grief process takes, it's like 6 months.
I know. Yes.
Not that you're not functional at all during that time, but for any kind of fog to lift with grief, it takes some time because you're having to like rearrange your whole self.
Everything. Yes. Everything.
Can you share a little bit more about what you see, other ways that you see grief showing up for, I guess, anyone in the perinatal pregnancy, postpartum?
Yes. Yes, I work a lot with perinatal anxiety and depression in my practice. And what I see so many times, and I wish that I had researched if this was area specific or more broad, what I see so many times is moms who have internalized a lot of shame around the fact that they're struggling with their mental health in the postpartum time frame. Sometimes it stems from things that, you know, family members have mentioned or friends have mentioned. But I've seen it too where, you know, it's just they'll be, you know, what I call the doom scrolling on social media, and they'll see something, you know, if you'd had a particular type of birth, then you wouldn't struggle with your mental health. Or if you had done this, then you wouldn't struggle with your mental health. Just so many things. And we know with birth, even the best of plans, there are still many things that are, beyond our control with having a baby. And so I see a lot of anxiety and depression resulting from maybe things not going as they planned or hoped with their birth. But then they start to struggle and experience grief with the fact that what they had hoped for in terms of how their mental health affected them post-birth is not what they hoped for. And so then that leads to internalizing and, you know, difficult emotions and ruminating thoughts. If I had done this, I wouldn't be dealing with this now. Or if I had tried to enjoy every moment when he was younger, then I wouldn't be feeling this way now. It's like, that's not necessarily the case. You know,
right. But how it's yeah. A tough question. Cause that,
yes, how do you know? Yes. Right. Yes. How do we know? And one of the things that I really like, and when we go there in those conversations, is it's an intervention through acceptance and commitment therapy, is start having conversations about their values. Like, in these moments, regardless of how old your kiddo is, what are the things that you really value about this experience and with what you hope for? And so then we go back and we look through those scenarios and situations that we've discussed from their past, whether from birth forward, and just identify times when they did see themselves parenting according to their values. And that doesn't mean that those days were ideal or those days were perfect. It just means they can see instances of when they were parenting according to their values. And then that almost always changes the nature of the conversation in a good way. It validates what they were feeling and experiencing, but also shows evidence of, hey, you are parenting in a way that's true to the values that you possess.
Well, that I imagine helps like close the gap on that.
Yes.
Of loss.
Yes.
I guess loss sometimes feels out of control.
It does.
It's really hard to find the ground. So to
speak, it is.
Like how you were describing helping somebody through that. Yeah. It's hard to see that you are doing something that you
want. Yes.
To do. Yes. Feels so bad.
Yes.
The disconnect between what something feels like and what's actually happening.
Yes.
Is quite hard. So like somebody who's grieving might feel lost in their feelings, you know, emotionally, but their behavior might be that they're doing what they want to do.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's almost always what I hear. They're able to talk about moments of intention or moments of joy, even though it's a day that might have just been excruciatingly difficult. Like, they did get in the floor and play with their kiddo, or they chose to hold their little one for a contact nap because it was just, you know, peaceful and, you know, precious space in that moment. So I think, and that's something I try to do in my practice, is just help identify some of those moments of joy, or maybe when things aren't quite as severe in the hard moments. Like, we can experience joy in the middle of a hard moment. And again, it's trying to reconcile our beautiful brains to that fact. You can feel both. You can experience both.
Sure. I imagine that applies to not just the disenfranchised grief that you're talking about, but going back to the loss of your own mother or mother figure even. You said already, like, that there's a distinction between people who had a good relationship, supported relationship with their parent, and not a good one that wasn't supportive. So maybe we can talk about them in kind of two separate, overly simplified tracks.
Yes.
But if you are feeling like you're thinking of somebody who had a good and supportive relationship with their own mother, and they're maybe feeling lost in the, like, my mom was supposed to help me with this stuff.
Yes.
And she's not here and I don't know what to do. How do people cope with that and manage that, a feeling lost in their own motherhood journey?
Right. It sounds almost too simple to be true, but I've initiated conversations around, well, if she were here, what would you do? And since she's not here, the conversation builds on that, of those things, what are you going to do anyway? So if she were here, the things that you know you would do, are you already doing some of those same things, even though she's not here? And again, I wish I had data on it. Maybe I need to apply for funding and try to do a study. But I can't think of any time where a parent was unable to identify that they weren't doing some of the things anyway that they would do if their mom was here. And then that instills like some hope, and it's like they can catch their breath a little deeper. It's like, okay, she's not here, but I am still doing a lot of the things that I would do even if she were mm-hmm. here.
Yeah. I mean, right. That is important to mm-hmm. kind of make that concrete.
Yes.
For people to have something to hold on to.
Yes. I've found that very beneficial to really build on the presence of something instead of focusing on the absence of something or trying to, you know, squash difficult emotions or some things like that. Building on the presence of something that they've identified, it makes it even more powerful. It's not something I've pointed out necessarily. It's something they've identified. And then we build on that.
I think that is really good because it's great because it can also facilitate like still feeling connected.
Yes. Yes.
Even if somebody's not there mm-hmm. physically.
Yes.
There,
yes.
That there is some part of their own mother experience mm-hmm. of their childhood with their mother
yes.
that they're bringing in with their own kiddos.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, that mm-hmm. can feel, that feels really potentially quite powerful.
Like I said, I've seen it just really create a renewed perspective that's more hopeful, almost like they can take some meaning from that experience. And I think when we're suffering or having a really hard time, if we can find some meaning, it can almost make it feel like that it has our suffering has a purpose. I've seen that time and time again in having those conversations about the presence of things. And it might be something really small and minor all the way up to things that are major to them. That's the beauty of it too. It's very subjective. Like it works
all right
for the very individual. It's not a cookie cutter thing. It's very individualized.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a great, powerful way to keep somebody connected to mm-hmm. themselves and their mother.
Yes.
It's still so hard.
It is.
Like you were saying at the top, that kind of like mix of grief and being present and being connected in current time,
mm-hmm.
kiddo. And then kind of going down that other track that I mentioned, when there is a loss of when there's not a mother around, but you mm-hmm. had a really difficult relationship with them, or the mother's still alive, but they're not a source of comfort mm-hmm. or support or anything like that. Going into your own motherhood experience can be quite complex.
Very complex.
And what are some ways that you are able to support people in those scenarios?
Yes, really a lot of the, I would say mostly along the same lines in terms of building on the presence of something, but not in the way that I would have the conversation with somebody who had a very stable and supportive mother figure. It's what it looks like. What are you doing differently? Or what do you hope to do differently in order to meet your kiddo's needs in ways that you verbalize your needs aren't met? So again, that speaks to the presence of something, not from their experience, because those narratives are usually, like I said, they're complex, they're filled with pain. They're stressful. They bring up, you know, really stressful emotions, painful emotions. So looking at it from the sense of how are you parenting your child already, that tells you you're doing something different. I've had multiple clients say, like, the trauma stops here. Like, it's not carrying on to my children. Like, I'm going to do the work and I'm going to stop it here. So again, it really goes back to a values-based conversation, or even having a conversation about what are you doing differently. And then as we progress in the counseling relationship, really using those things that they say initially as a baseline. So what else are you doing? When, you know, maybe your partner noticed that you did something, what does that tell you? And then what do you need to continue doing that would ensure you're doing something different with your own kiddo?
Yeah, I think that is also really powerful. It's made me think of a couple of examples about people I'm currently supporting who have that challenging relationship. And sometimes that anxiety is really high of like, I can't do anything like my mm-hmm. mom did to me. And so sometimes it can almost feel like the pendulum swings where somebody, let's say, might become, if they had some or abandonment from a mother, they become like very overly involved in mm-hmm. every aspect.
Yes.
And that is so anxiety producing.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. They're not able to see what they're already doing that is different from what their parent did. So it's like that, like grounding to the present is.
Yes.
It's useful across the board.
It is. I think so.
For everybody. Because, right, you have your own relationship to whoever mm-hmm. it is that you're relating to, but also the past and the future and what you want that to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be really hard in the midst of all of that
Oh, yeah.
Emotional upheaval. Really, mm-hmm. really hard to see that you're doing a good job already.
Yes.
Or doing yes. the job that you want to do, however
you that you want to do. Yes, absolutely. That's so true. yes to all of the above. And that's when, in those moments too, I'm really glad that they've sought out therapy, you know, for support, for education, for validation, for all of those things. Because my mind, I don't know if it's a mom brain thing or a counselor brain thing, but my mind goes to the ones that are struggling and maybe they haven't reached out for a variety of reasons. We know there's a variety of reasons. I'm really glad for the ones that do reach out and we can create that space. And then for the ones that don't reach out, I've seen, you know, things like community education, podcasts, workshops, different things like that being useful tools so that they still have information and support, even if they're not in a therapeutic relationship.
For sure.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Can you say more about the educational piece and yes. the support and how, what kinds of things you've seen that are helpful and how it helps people?
Yes, it's been a couple of years ago now, but I had a couple of midwives in the area where I live reach out and just ask for some resources for education to give to clients that they had seen or that doulas were working with that for various reasons were not ready to come to counseling. And so they wanted to have some resources to share. And so that really started my wheels turning in terms of what are some things that we can make available so that they can know they're not alone, maybe in what they're thinking and experiencing, even though they're not in a counseling relationship. So I had actually been contacted by an organization in Virginia, which is my home state. I live in Texas. I wound up doing some virtual community education and wellness for that organization, just in really for their employees to know. It's a family services organization. When we hear parents say certain things, or when we have parents ask for certain resources, like how do we have these conversations because we don't know how to help. And then in the area where I live, there was interest in community education for, I say, really anybody that loves someone that's had a baby, you should have some type of education and resources to assist. So I'll be honest, this podcast is one that I have found extremely useful in sharing so many important messages around the mental health and just navigating all of the changes and the things that we go through and grow through and how everything in life is changed and is affected when we become parents. So we put our heads together, me and a couple other professionals, we put our heads together and created a list of resources of different books, podcasts, TED Talks, things like that, just so that we could, midwives and doulas in this instance, could have a list of resources to hand off to their families. And then hosting some conversations in the community where it was just really open space where people could come and engage in conversations around postpartum mental health.
Right. I mean, creating the space is so yes. important.
Yes.
It's beautiful because, I mean, you don't know what people are going to come in with.
Yes.
But when you are like you said, creating the space, it makes it possible for people mm-hmm. who don't have avenues to get the support,
yes.
to come and get the support, or even mm-hmm. hear how other people are dealing with similar things.
Yes.
Because it can feel so lonely.
Yes.
And so isolating.
Yes.
I think too, what is really hard about, well, a lot of things is mm-hmm. that sometimes people will worry that they'll go into a group setting and they'll be more overwhelmed
yes.
by their hearing. But when you go into like a facilitated group mm-hmm. with somebody who already knows that that might happen.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, it's kind of addressed way to continue to make that space safe.
Yes.
Safe as possible as it can be for you, given
right.
whatever's going on. So what do you see from, you know, when people get the education, information, and I guess maybe even the support people, the mm-hmm. doulas and midwives that you were talking yes. about, how has it impacted them to be able to support their clients, patients? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that reminds me, I did a similar presentation at a pelvic floor physical therapy office a few months ago, just some general like provider education, but in that setting, and then also with midwives and doulas with whom I've worked, and then people that have attended the community education events, it's almost like a collective, I would say sigh of relief, but collective expression that we're so glad that we've said these things out loud and that we've heard other people share, because it helps to know that we're not alone. Moms, you know, who are struggling, they're not alone. Family members who don't really feel prepared to help, they're not alone. Other family members feel that same way. Providers who, like pelvic floor physical therapists, for example, that see moms after that 6-week appointment, they have been able to put words to, you know, talking about differences in baby blues and postpartum depression and presentations of postpartum anxiety. And if you continue to feel this way, here are some resources and support options for you. So I've just seen a collective amount of really, I would say, positive feedback. And I don't mean that in a toxic positivity way, but just like, I'm so glad we were having these conversations. Like, it helps me feel like I have a direction. It helps me feel like I'm not alone. And then I think from a bigger picture from our side is that we know it's really helping reduce stigma. And right. everything that we do to reduce stigma, then it just means more moms are going to be more likely to reach out for help if they're struggling.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. is so true.
Yeah.
And it's just so, we had this conversation with someone else who is recently on the podcast about how much support the support providers need.
Yes. Yes.
And they might have experienced their own loss.
Yes.
Things get really complex.
They do get complex.
When the providers themselves are dealing with their own mm-hmm. stuff too. So
yes.
When you empower those folks, yes. they can yes. empower the people they're supporting yes. and then mm-hmm. the world is a better place.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's really what education is. I mean, at least the way I structure it is I really hope people do feel empowered. You know, I just empowered, being sure we're creating that space for reducing stigma. That's what comes to mind. But yeah. empowerment, hope. Again, I think hope can be just a really important part of the conversation when we're talking about not only birth givers, but providers who help them in various capacities. If we feel hopeful about the work that we're doing and the education and support that we're able to provide, I think that's a formidable force in a good way.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah,
it really is.
Yes.
Well, that is a beautiful message. And to anybody mm-hmm. who's listening, certainly if you're a provider, get the support so you can feel empowered.
Yes.
And if you are somebody who is dealing with this mothering without a mother, that there are places for you to go to mm-hmm. and to get the support that you need. Yeah, I thank you so much for bringing this yes. topic to the podcast and being able to support people with it.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so glad that this platform exists just to share and talk about so many things that are important in the journey. I don't think we ever have it all figured out, but it's definitely good to have resources like this one. And I really appreciate the space to share about how mother loss can impact our own parenting journeys.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I know it will help so many people.
Yes, I hope so. Thank you.
Please connect with Olivia at OliviaWaddellCounseling.com, on Instagram, OliviaWaddellCounseling, and also on LinkedIn. If you are somebody who's experienced mothering without a mother, whatever the relationship status, I hope that this was supportive to you and that you feel seen and heard, at least for some parts of your experience. And if you know anybody who has experienced this, please send them this episode. It is so important for people to have just knowledge and information and support and to feel seen and heard, especially during times where they might feel their loneliest. And for anyone here who's a new listener, please do go subscribe to the podcast so you can get all of these episodes downloaded directly to you. The more subscribers this podcast has, the better it is for the podcast and more people will be able to find it. And that is my whole goal, for everybody who needs this support to be able to find it. So whatever way you can support, by subscribing, by sharing on Instagram or social media, or sending it to somebody that you care about, all of those avenues are greatly appreciated. I thank you so much for being here. Until next time. Please find the Mom and Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking